This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hello and welcome to The Bunker, Start Your Week, your need to know on news and politics. I'm Roz Taylor and joining me is Gavin Essler. Hello, Gavin.
Hello and good morning.
Rishi Sunak is announcing new apprenticeship places this morning. He's had another bad week. The furore over Frank Hester's £10 million donations to the Conservatives and Hester's remark that Diane Abbott makes you hate all black women hasn't gone away. The polls are even worse than they were before the budget. I read yesterday, Gavin, that a vibe shift has taken place in fevered Tory minds and that they want Penny Mordaunt to become the new leader. But apparently Grant Shapps also thinks he could unite the party. What the hell's going on?
Is there no beginning to their talents, I wonder? I mean, you know, wouldn't you just like to have one week in British politics when the government talks about us rather than about themselves? And I mean, quite clearly, they hate each other. It's quite obvious that they loathe each other. It's also quite obvious that the problem isn't their series of failed leaders, although they've had plenty of those. The problem with the Conservative Party is the Conservative Party itself and a system which allows them to cling on to power when they've got absolutely nothing positive to say, you know, about just about anything, frankly. We had the Fixed Term Parliament Act from 2010, which never really worked. And Theresa May got round it perfectly legally, and Boris Johnson got rid of it. But we, as a nation, somehow allow our prime ministers to decide when is the best moment for them to tell us that we can vote for them again or not. We have a bizarre system, and our complacency about this, I hope, is being shaken by the way in which the Rishi Sunak just staggers on. I mean, it reminds me, it's almost like the Conservative Party is brain dead, but they haven't. The rigor mortis hasn't quite set in. They are just in a terrible mess. And I just find the whole soap opera just so... This is otherwise such a competent country in so many ways, and we have to put up with this. It seems to me quite sad, almost.
Penny Mordaunt stood for the leadership before, didn't she? And now she seems to want the job again.
Yes, well, I suppose when you have a succession crisis, which is obviously what Conservatives feel they have, you have all the people who ran before or were thinking of running before or thinking, I could do better, I could do better. Fight, 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 we all remember. And she held up a sword. I can't think of anything else that's hugely distinctive, apart from the fact that she's going around to a lot of constituency parties talking to them. But doesn't this get to the heart of what's wrong with our system? We've had so many, I think we've had 12 housing secretaries in the Conservative period. We've had our rotating prime ministers. And in order to become Liz Truss as prime minister, all you had to do was get 81,000 votes in a country of 68 million people, 81,000 votes from Conservative Party members. But not only that, when that system didn't work, the way they did it was just have the MPs decide. It was Rishi Sunak, essentially. We have a flexible constitutional system, you could say, but anything which is flexible can easily be bent. And it just seems to me that this is another charade within a party all about them. It is absolutely not about us. And I don't think that the changing leaders again, without changing policies, changing direction, and looking at what has gone wrong over the past 14 years, which is a lot, is going to change much in Britain.
And to muddy the waters further, her allies claim that she is not in fact interested in taking the leadership, at least not now, and that the right wing of the party is merely using her as a stalking horse in order to ensure that their favoured candidate gets through later.
Stalking horse, yes. Well, you know, dead donkeys. And I don't know. I just want to say that I'm ruling myself out from running for the leadership of the Conservative Party. I mean, what a shambles.
Well, I suppose the Conservatives might argue that if the Fixed Term Parliaments Act were still in operation, we would be going to the polls in November, which may well be what we end up doing anyway. But we've been told, of course, that we won't get an election at the beginning of May, but it does feel like the last days of Rome. And how long can a party in this state cling on? Because it feels like the longer they go, the more they will be punished by the electorate.
Well, that does look like that, actually. It reminds me of, there's an old, I think it's a Will Rogers joke from the United States from years ago. Are you a member of an organized political party? No, I'm a conservative. You know, it just, what more can one say? They are obviously hoping, to make another quote, like Mr. Micawber, that something will turn up. But what is it? What would possibly turn them around after 14 years in which our health outcomes are worse, our economy seems stagnant at best, and in some cases, our public services just simply don't seem to function. Anything from the railways to the National Health Service just doesn't seem to be working the way perhaps it should. So what is the point of them, I wonder? And that's why it is about them rather than about us. And I think that is incredibly unfortunate, actually.
Back to Grant Shapps. He apparently cancelled a trip to Odessa because Russia had got wind of his visit and they might well have tried to take him out, I suppose, in their parlance. It feels as though the West is giving up on Ukraine a bit, but it doesn't yet feel able to say so. Though Emmanuel Macron did break ranks last week, didn't he, with quite a punchy speech?
Yes, the French are showing, I think, considerable leadership, and we are attempting to do something, but having underinvested in our own armed forces and having, you know, aircraft carriers that don't seem to work terribly well and all that doesn't put us in a brilliant position. And also the fact that we're not within the EU arguing for this in the way that Macron is unfortunate. The Grant Shapps incident, there is clearly a, what can one say, the FSB is reinvigorated. The Russian intelligence service is seriously reinvigorated. And the fact that they did this for Grant Shapps, they're sending a message. That's what they're doing. I don't think anybody thought that they were likely to try and shoot down the plane. But they're saying to us all, look, we could do this. And the FSB, the Russian intelligence service, had a terrible, terrible time in 2022 because they clearly misjudged what would happen with the Ukraine invasion. And it was a bit of a disaster for them. And I'm told there was a bit of a purge as well within the service. But now, because they are Putin's pals, I suppose one should say, they are making their presence felt in all kinds of ways, including, one assumes, the attack on one of Navalny's key supporters in Lithuania recently. So this support for Ukraine from the West, which seems to me absolutely vital, is also being undermined clearly by the American presidential campaign. And that puts us in real difficulty because, as Macron points out, this is our front line too.
And this resurgent FSB comes at a time when Vladimir Putin has won, if we can use that word, re-election in Russia, as we always knew he would. He claims to have got 87% of the vote. It always seems to be about 87% of the vote with dictators, doesn't it? Some brave Russians did protest, didn't they?
The bravery of individual Russians is astonishing to me. I mean, I had some contact with Vladimir Karamurza, who's one of Navalny's supporters, who I can't remember when it was, 18 months ago, I think he said he was going back to Russia to take the political fight further. And I said to him, it was a Zoom conversation, he was in Washington, I said, you're crazy. And he said, well, I'm a patriotic Russian and I have to do what I have to do. And we haven't heard from him since. He's jailed somewhere. So the bravery of these Russians who turned up to protest or to abstain in person or to spoil their ballot papers, it's absolutely extraordinary. And you're right, this is the Russian election is a vanity project for Putin. And I suppose one just has to ask, why does he feel he needs to do this? Why does he feel he needs the kind of trappings of democracy in a way which are clearly not democratic? Who is he trying to impress? I'm not quite clear about the psychology of all this, but he obviously feels he has to go through the motions. But the heroes are the ones who turn up and protest.
Is it psychology, or is it that if you carry on with the pretense of elections, there are certain things in the international community that it's easier to do? And despite the fact that they can be fatally undermined by, you know, removing your opposition and no free media and so on, just the pretense of them perhaps gives you some kind of advantage?
Yeah, that's perhaps true. And it also suggests, actually, I think it's quite detrimental to the idea of democracy elsewhere, because he is able to say, well, you know, look at your elections. They're no different from ours. And that's implicit in this argument. And maybe when we contemplate the American election and see how that is going, we have to think how much superior are the democratic systems in operation from the way in which Putin manipulates things in Russia. So he's the psychological warfare that an ex-KGB agent now in charge of Russia is able to construct is really very, very interesting. I'm sure books are being written about it, but it's very, very dispiriting.
Speaking of the US elections, Donald Trump has been campaigning in Ohio and he delivered another confused rant. This time he described migrants as not people. These are animals. How has that gone down?
Well, with Trump supporters, of course, it's gone down quite well. It is interesting that if migrants are animals, that implies that his own family are animals, because his grandfather was a migrant from Germany, Trumps. So, you know, his own family, most Americans are from families of migrants, but it goes down very well. It's the kind of boilerplate rhetoric from people who are either not thinking about it or are very extreme or are just desperate and think that Donald Trump is interesting and will break the mold of politics as usual, or all the cliches that applied to him a few years ago. But aren't we watching, it's very difficult to put this in words that don't seem offensive, but it's a mind is a terrible thing to lose. I mean, he does sound as if he is going completely off his rocker. And that is not a medical diagnosis. It's just a kind of an observation from 3,000 miles away. It just seems very, very odd, the stuff he comes out with.
And Joe Biden has been making it clear that he's increasingly unhappy with the Israeli PM, Benjamin Netanyahu. Does it look as though the threatened assault on Rafah will go ahead despite American opposition?
Well, I think very interesting is what Biden's saying and also what Chuck Schumer is saying. You know, he's a New York senator and he is clearly distancing himself from Netanyahu. So if you lose Chuck Schumer and his voters, many of his voters, as Netanyahu has done, you may be in some degree of political difficulty. On the other hand, what has Netanyahu got to lose? I mean, there are those within Israel who think that once this is over, however it's over, and I hope it's over soon, in the most peaceful way that is possible, given the circumstances. But Netanyahu has got nothing to lose by continuing the fighting because he may find himself in real political trouble and legal trouble after it's all over. So it is as we all know, it's an absolutely awful situation. And it seems that in the case of Mr. Netanyahu, he doesn't really care how many people are suffering or dying of malnutrition, or children who are starving in the area which is probably about to be attacked.
And the US has other trouble on its doorstep. It's evacuating its citizens from Haiti as police fight a gang leader known as Barbecue. How has the Caribbean country got to this anarchic state?
I think it always was. You know, I mean, I was the BBC's American correspondent in the 1990s and went there quite a bit afterwards. I have never been to Haiti, but it was always, always a mess, always a small elite who ran the place. And there were all kinds of gangsters, an economy that was a criminal economy. And it has never, ever, in my lifetime, functioned as a really functioning state. I mean, going back to, I think it was the 60s and 70s, Papa Doc Duvalier. So there's always been a strongman in charge and various gangsters who were used by various factions. And right now, the difference is that there's not a strongman in charge because there was a weak president who is now, I think, out completely. But it's always been like this. And nobody has ever found a way of turning it round.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Back at home, the speculation about the Princess of Wales's health has not gone away. The Sun has quite a curious front page today, which is headlined Kate Outdoors, although the picture it shows of her was actually taken before Christmas. I hear, and I'm sure you do too, Gavin, many rumours about what's going on in the royal family, and if even half of them were true, I don't see how the monarchy could carry on. We're not in the business of rumour on the bunker, but what can we say about the way this crisis has been handled?
Badly, I think. We all agree. We can then move on because, as you say, there are so many stories out there. But you have to ask yourself a number of questions. Who authorised the photograph to be released? One of the things that I do know about having had very little to do with covering royal stories, but had something to do with the palace in the past, they're incredibly competent people, you know. I mean, they're really bright and they very often, I'm talking about the officials, they sometimes like the idea that they are, you know, a little bit buffoonish because that means if they make a mistake, they can kind of excuse it. I was privy to one kind of conversation where when Her Majesty the Queen Elizabeth II had done something and I was with a very senior royal advisor and a journalist said, was that thing that happened, was that the Queen's idea? And the royal official said, yes, of course it was. It was Her Majesty's idea. And the journalist went off and then the chap turned to me and said, when it works and it's a good idea, it's always the Queen's idea. When it's not, when it's a bad idea, it's my idea. So you understand the sophistication of these people.
Meanwhile, Wales has a new First Minister who will be sworn in later this week. Tell us about Vaughan Gething.
Well, you know, he is remarkable, is it not, that in our country we have now got in both the Mayor of London, the leader of the Labour Party in Scotland, the First Minister of Scotland, the Prime Minister of our country, and Vaughan Gething himself, people of colour, people of diverse backgrounds and people of talent. So I think it's quite remarkable. And in a quiet way, we should kind of congratulate ourselves about this. And whether you like their politics or not, they're from different parties and different backgrounds. But that is in itself just very interesting. What's also interesting to me, actually, is the way in which we have come to accept constitutional change for Northern Ireland, Scotland and Wales. And England has been left behind remarkably in failing to devolve very much and failing to recognise that we just kind of change the constitution in various ways, which create different power centres, which compete with Westminster. And at some point, we're going to have to sit down and think about this, it seems to me.
But there is a controversy about Vaughan Gething surrounding donations to his campaign, isn't there?
There is. He's apparently taken compared to the Hester affair and the Conservative Party, is small change. I think it was £100,000 from someone whose company apparently was involved in a couple of environmental breaches. But, you know, again, this is another part of our system which we just tolerate, which is who gives money to political parties, how should we finance them? And again, we kind of muddle through about these matters without really considering them, because I think all political parties are likely to be embarrassed by the kind of people who are prepared to give them money. Because, of course, they give them money from the goodness of their heart and because they support democracy and all that. And sometimes, but by coincidence, they get contracts for PPE or other things. So it's a kind of murky system, but nobody particularly likes to poke into it too much because the political parties have got to be funded somehow.
The Rwanda bill is now at what's called the ping pong stage in Parliament, and that means it bounces back and forth between the Commons and the Lords in an effort to reach a compromise. The Times says the Home Office is hoping to send out deportation notices to people it wants to send to Rwanda this week. And that will leave, I think, as about 8 to 12 weeks for them to potentially appeal and then flights, as the Home Office hopes, take off in early summer. Interest rates are tipped to stay on hold in the monthly decision this week, not to everyone's satisfaction, it has to be said. And Sunak's due to address the 1922 committee of backbench Tory MPs on Wednesday, which could be yet another flashpoint in the Conservative wars. More cheerfully, it's the spring equinox on Wednesday, and after that, the days start to become longer than nights again. Do you have plans for lighter evenings, Gavin?
I actually am so cheered up by the fact that it is now lighter both in the evenings and in the mornings. I'm particularly cheered up by the fact that the monsoon season seems to be over and it's not raining, because I've got two dogs that need to be walked, and that's what I shall be doing this morning. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to a very nice spring.
Thanks so much, Gavin.
Thank you. Thank you. That was fun.
And you can support us to keep making Bunkers for just £3 a month As the ad market gets tougher, we're even more grateful for your support. Just search Patreon Bunker Podcast. I'm Roz Taylor, and thanks for listening. Hello, I'm Roz Taylor with news of Oh God, What Now?, the politics podcast that's never going to leave its voter ID at home. On Friday's show, it's 6 months until the US election, and Donald Trump is stuck sitting on trial in a New York courthouse. Is he bulletproof, or can Joe Biden turn around the polls? In the second half, it's local elections week, but we've steadily taken power away from local authorities. What if we gave it back? And in the extra bit for supporters, is there a right level of ruthlessness in politics? That's Oh God, What Now? With me, Roz Taylor, Raphael Baer, Hannah Fearn, guest Nikki McCann Ramirez, out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Start Your Week from the Bunker was written and presented by Roz Taylor with Gavin Esler. The producer was Liam Tate, and the audio producer was me, Jade Bailey. The managing editor is Jacob Jarvis, and the group editor is Andrew Harrison. With music by Kenny Dickinson and artwork by Jim Parrott, Start Your Week from the Bunker is a Podmasters production.